You know, as Mark Twain who observed, you know, it's better not to know so much than to know so many things that aren't so. And sadly, this is what we've come to here in America because of the propaganda that people have been filled with. You know, as Larry Klayman was pointing out, it has been so profuse. I mean, to such a degree, you know, talking about Donald Trump, Donald Trump's brand has been so defined and overwhelmed by the mainstream media and big tech at all, that if he is to run again, he's going to be spending so much time trying to right the record. And here he is. I mean, he's been banned from Twitter. I mean, can you imagine? You've got a president of the United States banned from Twitter. He's so controlled by the mainstream media and the tech industry that, you know, he's tied up. So where and how can he be effective? I want to bring Bruce Thatcher on, the founder of History Speaks, author of Rise and Decline. Bruce, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Oh, good to be here again, Bill.
Well, we've got lots to catch up on, and I want to talk about your blogs. But before we do, I want to get your perspective on Donald Trump's influence over this fractured Republican Party. I mean, I told people I thought that because what I saw, you know, going into the 2020 elections is that the Democrats didn't have a shot, but they were able to pull it out, and only God knows the truth. We have a good idea of what the truth is, but it seems that the powers to be, including our Supreme Court, you know, can't handle and doesn't want the truth. And so here we are, living with a president that, you know, what, over 70 million Americans are saying, this isn't my president. I mean, this is a fraud, you know, what has been perpetrated on the American people. But meanwhile, the brand, the name of Donald Trump has been so, you know, so fashioned and has taken such a hit by all this, you know, negative reporting on him. I'm wondering if he runs again in 2024, if he's going to really have a fair shot at being able to win, regardless of how bad things get under the Democratic Party.
I think it's interesting. In your question you pose, you put the adjective fair. Will he have a fair shot? And the people who have opposed him from the day he was nominated, even before he was nominated to run for president, have been working very hard to make sure that there's no fair shot for him to succeed. So they've been corroding his image, his brand, his everything Trump from before he was, even before he was actually running for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is,
those things have an impact. They have an impact.
Without a doubt. I mean, look what happened. You know, a lot about, in any kind of marketing situation, about a third of people's response will be based on word of mouth, right? Mm-hmm. If you find a way to shut people's mouths and make it seem like if you talk about Trump, that or put a sign up in your yard, it's going to be torn down, your house is going to get egged, your car is going to get scratched. Bumper stickers were not profusely put on cars of people who supported Donald Trump because they didn't want to get their car keyed up. And you heard that time and again. So all that was, you know, an oppression of the vote, not to mention, you know, the purposeful decision by the media not to report on Hunter Biden when you had roughly 15% of Democrats said, hey, if I'd known that story, I wouldn't have voted for Joe Biden.
Yeah.
So what about those issues?
Well, what we have is what the left, the progressives, put whatever title you want to put on them, want to achieve, absolutely depends on control of expression and thinking, if they can. Mm-hmm. And we have a Second Amendment that says government can't censor and control communication, but
You mean the First Amendment?
First Amendment, yes,
right,
I'm sorry.
Right.
First Amendment.
No, that's okay. I know we're going to talk about the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah. We're not ready yet, but yes, the First Amendment. I'm with you. Go ahead.
The Constitution prescribes government
yes.
from passing laws that impinge on the freedom of expression. But they don't have anything. They don't say anything about what private enterprise can do. And private enterprise includes big tech. It includes big business. It includes the press and communications, and all of these people seem to be conspiring to control the communication, or control what people say, or control what people think. And the result, one part of the result, and part of it's violent.
Yes.
So part of the result is exactly as you say. People who may support a particular point of view or Donald Trump often just keep their opinions to themselves. They won't speak because they will be punished one way or another.
But the thing is, it's a broad use of the Constitution and the First Amendment right, as you point out here, Bruce, because once big tech runs under the shelter of government with that 230 article, then that takes them out of that, you know, that venue and that protection, in my humble opinion, I believe. And
well,
even with mainstream...
Opinion,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think your opinion is absolutely right. They have a get out of jail card. They have a we can't be touched card. Now the press was created and established. The concept of the press was established to monitor and control government essentially by providing complete information. They no longer do that. They're part of the.
They're complicit. Absolutely.
They've jumped in.
They've jumped into the deep end of the pool with them, with their floaties, and they're all having a good time here at the people's expense. So again, to this point, they violated what their reason to exist is all about and how they're protected by, by the Constitution. And the people have to revolt in a way to say, you know, either cancel their subscriptions. They're already doing this. I mean, look at what happened. I remember when I was growing up, Bruce, the mainstream media or at least broadcast media, the three major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, you know, garnered about 85% of the viewing audience. They've done such a terrible job. Now it's in the low 40s. So, you know, it didn't take a long time, but they're not quite picking up on the fact that because they've abandoned their credibility and they've compromised their brand, that people are saying, hey, we're not with you anymore. And, of course, they justified by saying, well, you got all these other social media outlets and all that. And, of course, the social media outlets have been compromised. And now where do the people go? They go to shows like ours, independent shows, where, you know, until we get canceled, we're still, you know, able to pursue the truth and address it from a standpoint of, you know, for the good of all concerned and that which is substantiated by our U.S. Constitution, not by partisan hacks.
One would hope that somehow or other the Congress, at least enough to have an effect, would work up the gumption to remove the protection from big tech and also to apply antitrust laws against some of these huge conglomerates of communication and in the Internet and bring actions against them to wake them up a little bit.
But they're not going to do that, Bruce. I mean, yes, we all hope that they would have some courage to do this, but this is quite telling. The reason they don't do it, because people do that which they get rewarded for.
Exactly.
You know, every politician, both sides, and I mean that, and I hate to use the both sides argument, but this is the way the system, if anything is systemic, it's this. And that is, it's all about the preservation of their seats and their position in Congress. It's about life for them. And life for them is connected, the oxygen hose is connected to all these big money players that they have to kowtow to. If they don't, they're going to put, they're going to put their mortality at risk.
A mentor of mine many, many years ago said that if a lot of people get elected to Congress or elected to Washington and they have high ideals and things that they want to get done, but within a year, the system sucks them in. They all become corrupt.
Yeah. Well, it is systemic. I mean, that is systemic, the way what it does to them, because they're on the hamster wheel of preservation, and the hamster wheel tells them, hey, you can be there, and you might be able to, you know, if you're a senator, you might have a couple of years. If you're a congressman, congresswoman, it's measured in weeks, because no sooner do you get in than the reelection process and the fundraising must begin, or you're in trouble. We're talking with Bruce Thatcher, and our conversation will continue. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, do not lose hope. I mean, for many of us, we still believe that this is a nation, that we are one nation under God. And many of us continue to pray to that end, that we would realize our God-given destiny and that we're looking to God. We're admitting that, hey, look, we've messed up. We've blown it. We've made our mistakes. And even some who have turned their back on God during these past decades are realizing that they've got to turn back to God because God has the answer. I mean, look at government. As someone said earlier, you know, hey, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help. Really? I mean, yeah. You know, it's hysterical, Bruce Thatcher, how that echoes back. And here we are looking at $6 trillion in debt. And nobody is asking the question that you and I talked about years ago. And that is, number one, what kind of government do we really want? Number two, what kind of government can we afford? And the third thing that is missing from all this discussion, there's not one question by anybody saying, where can we be more efficient? We need infrastructure. We do need some of these things that they're talking about. Can we produce, can we provide for those needed developments and advancements in our country just by being more disciplined? I mean, households across the country, as you know, for years, you know, as the economy was going up and down, they're sitting around kitchen tables and going, okay, where can we cut back? How do we do this? Oh, yeah, I found we can save money here. We'll buy a different, you know, maybe we'll change our diet a little bit. I mean, they're cutting, they're making reasonable, common sense, you know, common sense decisions for the sake of their homes, but yet our government, they don't even think like that. They just keep spending money. Now we got the Democrats that are going to spend, and you know what happens. I mean, it's part of their personality. They spend, they tax.
The last president we had who actually sat down figuratively around the kitchen table was Calvin Coolidge. He sat down every day with his treasury chief, and he said, where can we cut? Where can we cut? Where can we cut? I don't think there's been a significant politician since then who has ever done that. And we used to be concerned about, we were talking about numbers of billions were big numbers, then trillions were big numbers. And only a year ago or 2 years ago, we were worried about a $1 trillion deficit. And now we're going $2, $3, $4 trillion. I mean, like it's water. It's like a drug, an addict. It's just. It was Rahm Emanuel who recently articulated the idea of don't let a crisis go to waste. And our government leaders, our politicians, have certainly taken that to heart. They've had a pathogen who's come along. They've turned it into a bigger crisis, maybe, than it ought to have been. And they're not letting it go to waste. They're they're printing the money and furthering their agendas based upon circumstances. And you ask, what can we do about it? And I'm beside myself. I don't know.
Well, the thing is, we can do it one at a time.
We can
and
do
take,
that.
Take personal responsibility. You know, people, for example, who may be thinking it's okay to cheat the government. You're not cheating the government. You're cheating your neighbor, your fellow taxpayer. I mean, on and on. And it's holding these elected officials to account to, you know, to buy what we can afford. And also, I mean, again, you know, this whole issue of systemic racism, we have systemic waste because what we've allowed is the politicians to buy votes, not even with their money. I mean, the gall they have, they buy votes with our money. And then we're encumbered with that liability just so that they can get reelected. I mean, this thing's so upside down. It's been upside down for so long that people think, oh, well, you know, we just got to think about spending more money. We need infrastructure. Or we need this help and this sort of thing. We got, you know, right now we're dealing with this pandemic. You think this is going to be the last pandemic that comes around? Where is there any kind of savings that we can look to in the Treasury when we need money to deal with the next pandemic?
Maybe what we need is to reeducate everybody, our people, and particularly our youth, in civics. How does it work?
Right.
That's largely been removed from educational curriculums, except for surface attention. Because you mentioned it, people just automatically think that money comes from somebody else, nowhere.
Right. Comes from the government.
That's
well,
right,
we are the government. That's they're pulling it out of our pockets. And you knew what was going to happen when Biden, you know, proposed this plan. The money was going to come from the Treasury. And once they opened up the Treasury, and the thing is that disgusts me, and the mainstream media is not helping us at all on this, is like with the COVID, you know, bill that came across. You know, they're saying it was like less than 10%. Now they're saying 1% of that money actually went to COVID relief. And the other part of it went to, just like with the Obama administration, it went off to pay off political favors, to heal blue states that were fiscally irresponsible, and on and on. I mean, you know, it's like with what Peter Schweizer reported with President Obama, that for these bundlers that were bundling, you know, millions of dollars for his campaign, Bruce, 85% got this deal. You would have loved this deal. For every dollar that they bundled for Barack Obama, they got $25,000 per $1. And that $25,000 per $1 came out of our treasury, all in the name of shovel-ready jobs and yada, yada, yada. Yep. These were all friends and neighbors of Barack Obama that benefited from this. And what happened to us? The middle class got absolutely decimated. There were no shovel-ready jobs, and people became more and more dependent on the government, which is what the Democrats want. We're here. We're That's from right. the government. We're here to help. We're here to, you know, it really is modern-day slavery, in my humble opinion.
Well, the way you make everybody equal is you make everybody slaves.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's what the left, the progressive, the politicians, and I don't think there's a great distinction among political parties. The politicians want to be in control. They want the power, they want the money, they want the say so.
Right.
And more and more the American people are saying, well, that's fine, go ahead, you know, but that's fine.
We'll give you $1,400, a little stimulus payment. They're a little bit of cake, you know. The only thing that's missing is Maria Antoinette, you know, handing out the cake.
But there are some bright lights. There are some things that are happening that you think might be glimmers of hope. Or glimmers of change on the thing. The University of Chicago, for instance, is one school that will no longer tolerate political correctness on campus. Mm-hmm. But they're pretty much a loner. There are not many joining them.
No, that's right.
And
you got more people supporting the 1619 Project the Confucius Institute by comparison.
That's right.
So that's the uphill battle that we're dealing with. Bruce, you only got about 3 minutes left, but I did want to address your blogs. I mean, what you were talking about, again, bringing truth, bringing knowledge to the problem, which sometimes is an oxymoron for some people in this country. They just want to, you know, pivot and stay in the area of emotion. They really don't want to, they can't handle the truth, as Jack Nicholson said.
Well, it's the idea of not letting a crisis go to waste is certainly evident in the current hoopla about guns. We've had suddenly four mass shootings in the space of a month or so. They're tragedies.
Yes,
30 people were killed, but that's a tiny fraction of 1% of all the murders in this country, and we don't spend any attention on those because they don't serve the purpose of the establishment.
Right.
So as soon as we have a mass shooting, you can predict it. They trot out their agendas, and suddenly they say, well, what we have to do is we have to ban this, we have to control this, we have to make sure that people can't get a hold of the guns. They don't pay any attention to motives or circumstances or opportunity. It's all guns because their agenda is guns.
Yes, they, right, exactly.
You know, they don't care about what's happening. Their agenda is guns.
Yeah, but and the thing is, Bruce, this isn't counting what happens in Chicago or Baltimore on a nightly basis, right? Especially after weekends.
Well, that's
so
right. Do you see
we don't
that
count. We don't. We don't count that. We just set that aside. That's just, you know, that's the endless Vietnam War, so to speak.
Yeah, dealing with those things doesn't serve their agenda. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get them that money that you talk about. It doesn't create a peg they can put their wrap their agenda around. So the press doesn't report all those shootings. Now you might get a paragraph on page 8 one day, but I mean, they're just accepted as normal. It's just terribly frustrating. I mean, we've got 400 million guns in this country, and they're talking about banning, increasing the difficulty of buying new guns. Are you kidding me?
Like that's worked, right? I mean, if you could go back in history and say, hey, every time we banned the AR-15, you know, this went down, the whole deal. Well, the fact of the matter is you're dealing with the hearts of men. And we know throughout history, men have found a way to kill men. No, it's just in our evil hearts, we do that sort of thing. So whether it's by gun or a tablespoon or a fork, people are going to find a way to, you know, kill somebody, right?
In the United States has more murders than any other country, almost any other country in the world. But that's because we're so big and so free. When you look at murder rate, murders per 100,000 people were like 109th or something like that.
Wow. Well, we got to leave it there, Bruce. To be continued. Bruce Thatcher right here from History Speaks. Thank you, Bruce.